Calling 911 when in an accident may just not be enough. Car accident, remember. After 911, call 411. 1-800-411-PAIN. 1-800-411-PAIN is a legal and medical referral service. Non-employee spokesperson.
Welcome back to 790 The Ticket. Frito here alongside Greg Likens. We hope that your recovery from Hurricane Irma is going well. School started again. Our two daughters were, I would say, reasonably happy to go back to school. You know, kids like that little break. But, you know, everybody needs a routine. Players need a routine. And the Dolphins players today told me that how glad they were to be back home now, sleeping in their own beds, showering in their own shower, being in their own homes. And now they're on a regular schedule again. You know, they're here at home. They had meetings today, watch film today. Tomorrow is a day off for the players. Some come in for treatments, but by and large, it's a day off. Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, they're back at Davie and they practice. That's the routine of an NFL player. And they're back into that here in Davie, in their home facility. And they're back, glad to be back in their routine. And I'm sure parents are glad to have their kids back in school. And kids are, most of them at least, are glad to have that routine back after missing 7 days of school.
Yeah, that's a lot of time to miss. But I'm sure there are ton of kids. I mean, you don't like the circumstances given it being a hurricane, but a lot of kids who enjoyed having that time off. I remember, I mean, the only thing that I can really relate to this, because like you, grew up in the Midwest for the most part. I did move down here in high school, but so I experienced lightning delays for the first time, which because the school I was at, part of the campus was outdoors. So if there was a lightning alarm went on down here in Florida, then you couldn't switch classes.
Wow. So you had to go outside to go from one classroom to another.
Right. Yeah. So that was interesting. But up north, it was just like if you have a snow day.
Yeah, but I grew up outside Chicago, as you did for a while. And, I mean, it would have to snow a ton. If it snowed 10 inches, that was school. When I grew up, God, I sound like an old man. Get off my lawn.
Tell me that you walked like 10 miles to class.
No, it was 20 miles, both ways uphill. But when I was living in D.C. for a couple years in the mid-80s, I mean, what wusses they are. If it's a Wednesday, if there's a threat, just the threat of snow on Thursday, they'd preemptively close the schools. Strap on a couple, D.C. But what the hell is that?
Yeah, because they couldn't handle it. I remember friends who grew up in Nashville, it was the same thing. They weren't.
Oh, my God.
They don't have the plows and all that that they're prepared for it. But in the Chicago area, I had school canceled a couple of times, not because of snow, but because it got so cold. Seriously,
I don't ever remember.
They didn't
that
want
happening.
The kids walking outside because there were all these, you know, freeze concerns that you were going to either get sick or you could get frostbite and all this other stuff. So a couple of times we did not go to school and we had to stay indoors because of the snow necessarily, because it got too cold.
786-360-0790. Let's take a call or two mixed up here with headlines as well. Adam Gates. It'd be great if he joined us at 8:15.
That'd be cool.
But Adam Beasley will join us at 8:15. Let's go to Bruno in Miami. Bruno, welcome to The Ticket. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
What's up, Bruno?
Oh, I'm good. I'm really happy about this win yesterday. And honestly, I can't really say anything bad about the guys. We went through this hurricane. You mentioned something very important, routine. Routine's incredibly crazy, and these guys are used to that. So, I mean, I was 2 days without light, and honestly, I couldn't even use the bathroom. I didn't feel good with the heat and all. So I respect these guys went out there and busted their butts and got the W. Honestly, we never used to get wins like this, if you think about it. And I don't think this week one actually sums up where the Dolphins are at all. The Patriots paid like, if you think about it, the first week, and then they came out and destroyed the Saints. And look at Atlanta against the Bears. First week one, the Bears were two plays away. Sign it up. And then you compare that to Atlanta that played yesterday. That was a completely different team. So, honestly, we need to wait a couple weeks at least. And, again, the Jets, I don't think it's a fair assessment, too, because we all know what the Jets are.
Turds.
Yes. Yes. So, if we wait another 2 weeks. And yesterday, my only thing was worrying about the secondary. After that Eagles game, we were a bit worried about that. And then, I mean, with a savvy veteran as you had with Rivers, I'm surprised we didn't get burnt like that. We got beat in the Lance and the short-term pass thing, and you can expect that from Rivers. So, honestly, I have nothing bad to say about the Dolphins. I'm really happy we got this win. Let's wait a couple more weeks before again, that whole gig thing, I see that, but you never know. You know a gig's never going to miss messing up, honestly. So, and I'm just happy we got this W, and let's wait a couple more weeks. Throw anyone under the bus, honestly.
Thank you for the call. Now, Gase isn't afraid to blame himself. He did. The soundbite we played, he called himself to the carpet. And last year, I remember, his first year with the team, Greg, there were, you know, when some players made the mistakes, I don't know if this was Gase being sincere or falling on the sword for his players, but players would make on-field mistakes, and Gase would strut in 1 week after the other and say, this was my fault. Don't blame me, don't blame them. Maybe he was just, again, taking the blame for his own players, deflecting them and making them feel better, or maybe he meant it sincerely. I'm not sure. I'm still not sure. But he's not afraid to say, I messed up.
Right. Yeah, you love the accountability that he has consistently had since becoming the head coach.
Yep.
And, you know, I think Bruno, I love the attitude overall that he has. Like, hey, we won the game, yep. A lot of extenuating circumstances. And I agree with that for the most part. I don't think it's unfair, though, to criticize them for ways they can improve.
Sure.
And I think that if we're going to, you know, think about this with a lot of common sense, that's what Adam Gase's coaching staff is going to do. They're going to watch the film. They're going to say, we need to do this better. We need to do that better. We need to do this better. Maybe we did this pretty well, but we'll continue to try to improve. And I agree. In a few weeks' time, we'll have a really good sense of how to evaluate this team. But considering what we have so far on tape, was a great performance? No. Was it good enough to get the win? Yes, and oftentimes that's all that matters.
He's Greg Likens. I'm Frito. You can join in at 786-360-0790. Jonathan in Miami will get you in just a second, but first let's go to headlines.
Here's what's trending now in Miami on The Ticket. WAXYAM South Miami and FM 104.3 HD2 Miramar.
The radio home of the Miami Heat.
Where is Lawrence Timmons? One day after the Dolphins beat the Chargers 19-17 on the road in Los Angeles, with Timmons AWOL from the squad, his absence remains a mystery. Following yesterday's game, Adam Gase said he'd address the situation today, but earlier this afternoon at his press conference in Davie, he refused to shed any light on it. The Marlins, winners of just three of their last 20 games, they host the Mets tonight right now in the third inning. Bottom of the third, they lead the Mets 1-0. Justin Bour has an RBI single. Now, if they do manage to lose tonight, they will officially be eliminated from the wild card race. Right now, they are 12.5 games behind the Rockies in that race. So they would need to win every game. The Rockies need to lose every game, and a couple other teams would have to do stuff. So, Chris Perkins, time to let go of the rope. The Dolphins can safely make their offseason reservations. And Charger, I think this is the most surprising headline I saw today. After Younghoe Koo, it looks like Younghoe Koo, but Greg here looked up the pronunciation. It's pronounced Younghoe Koo out of Georgia.
Southern,
okay.
Yes.
Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn said he's sticking with the rookie kicker and will not bring competition at that position this week. He missed a field goal in the waning seconds yesterday, a 44 field goal. It was wide right. He missed another kick earlier in the day. He's 1-for-4 on the season. His 44-yard attempt, ironically the same distance, against the Broncos in week one was blocked. I guess you could probably blame the offensive line. Well, when a block happens, usually the line, but it could be the holder, could be the kicker. There are a lot of factors, but had that one blocked as well. Rivers, you could see, was yelling at him yesterday after he missed that potential game-winning field goal. If I'm the Chargers teammates, I disagree vehemently with Anthony Lynn and say, what are you doing? We have no confidence in this guy.
Yeah, this is a strange one because of all positions, it's usually pretty easy. If your kicker's not doing well and not upholding the responsibilities of that job, then you can move on pretty quickly. I don't know if this was on purpose, if this was just a coincidence, but I saw something earlier today that Nick Novak, who is a longtime NFL kicker who right now is a free agent, posted on his social media accounts around the same time that coup field goal was missed, a picture of him practicing on his own with some friends making a long field goal. You know, obviously with no line in front of him, but I don't think that's much of a coincidence.
Where's Roberto Aguayo? I mean, the Tampa, who used a second, they traded up in the second round to get him last year, had a horrible rookie campaign. So he put him on waivers for some reason instead of letting him pass through waivers. The Bears picked up his deal.
Mm-hmm.
They cut him. After being a second round pick after 1 year, as far as I know, he's out of the league.
He's available. He's not on a roster right now.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, even bringing a guy like that in, which seems kind of crazy, at least
I don't know if you're on the same wavelength as me here, Josh, but if I'm Anthony Lynn, you might not have to replace the guy, but bring somebody in just to say, hey, yeah, you know, we're thinking about it.
And teams often do that on Tuesdays when the players are away from the facility and they try out. If it was a 57-yard field goal, all is forgiven because that's an exceptionally long distance. But if he's missing like a 44-yard field goal, he's 1-for-4 on the year. And those late game situations are not made. They're blown or they're, you know, he didn't make the kick or he missed the kick, whatever. If he screws up, it's like a closer in baseball blowing the save. You know, it's one thing if you have a 3-2 win or 3-2 lead, you let up two runs in the fifth inning and you lose 4-3. All right, that's a loss.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a 3-2 win in the ninth inning and your closer lets up two runs, that's a devastating loss.
Yeah.
The team really feels that because you were three outs away from winning. If you miss that late game field goal to tie it or win a game, that's, you know, all these players are like, wait a minute, we played 60 minutes. Yes, we had other chances, but the game was in your hands and you blew it.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why, I mean, kickers, if they're not doing their job, they usually don't hang around very long. So the fact that Anthony Lynn is sticking with him, I don't know if this speaks to the fact that he's a rookie head coach and, you know, making a rookie mistake, or if we see some kind of turnaround from Young Wei Koo as this season goes around. But I'll tell you, I don't know. I'll tell you this. If he misses another field goal in week three, I mean, I don't see how they can keep him around.
Those 4,000 fans in the StubHub Stadium will boom. Boy, was that pathetic. Let's go to Jonathan in Miami. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to 790 The Ticket.
Hey, guys. Good evening.
Good evening.
I mean, kind of like the last caller, I'm not too mad about the outcome of the game, obviously. I think, in a way, he was kind of being conservative because without a full defense, you know, being in play with Michael and Chase Evans at linebacker and or Chase Allen. I'm sorry, I forgot his name already.
Chase Allen.
Chase Allen. All right, there you go. I mean, maybe that's why he was being conservative. He was trying to take care of the ball because, I mean, the Chargers are very they're a very good offense. I mean, let's not get around the bush. And, you know, just like he probably would have done the same maybe against the Bucs, even though they are without Doug Martin, that's a very good offense as well. But he was just trying to get a feel of it. But I mainly called because I mean, again, in the preseason, I didn't see the front line on defense doing anything. I'm happy with the outcome of 40 yards rushing from Ingram, but it's just, I mean, from Gordon. I'm sorry,
Gordon.
From
right, Melvin. Wrong Melvin.
Yeah, yeah.
One stops the run, the other runs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just I'm not too happy about the defense. You know, the front line, which is a lot of money is involved in it, and no sacks. I mean, I'm just not I'm just not happy about that because in the preseason, it was the same thing. They didn't really put that much pressure on the quarterback again, you know?
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jonathan. That's something I brought up as well. And again, like, I know that Bruno called and said, hey, well, why are we criticizing all this? You know, I think that Jonathan brings up a fair point that the pass rush needs to be better. And against Phillip Rivers, and more specifically that offensive line from the Chargers, I was surprised they couldn't generate more pressure over the course of the game. And then I also surprised that William Hayes was the guy who got the lone sack, because
right,
that's not normally his forte. But overall, you know, what Jonathan has to say, I think, is very fair. Should they get after the pass rusher more? Yes. But the fact of the matter is, we talked about it all week going into this game. We talked about all off season. Could they stop the run? Could they improve their run defense? And at least through 1 week, they were superb against the run, allowing just 44 yards. So to me, defensively, that's probably my biggest takeaway. Also thought it was interesting, Josh, and I know that Adam Gase addressed this in the press conference, you know, yesterday, between today and yesterday, but I mean, Byron Maxwell, he said, was the better matchup.
Yes,
against the Chargers. So not only did he start, Altron Vernon didn't play at all. And I know that we were under the impression that it was a competition between those two to see who was going to start opposite Xavien Howard. The other part of this, which needs to be improved upon, I don't know if they have the personnel to do it, but the linebackers were terrible statistically against the pass.
Oh, it was Mike Hall, I think. I think nine passes were thrown to guys he covered.
For 95 yards.
Right. And everyone was completed.
So right. And the targets, the receptions, the yards allowed were all most for any linebacker across the league in coverage in week two. So.
But their linebacking situation, it was a mess before. Timmons just exacerbated the situation.
Right. So my point is this. The run defense, excellent. But moving forward, they're not saying the Jets are necessarily going to be able to take care of this and take advantage of this because they're the Jets. But Drew Brees in a couple of weeks, if that matchup is still there for them to exploit, you know the great quarterbacks and great offensive minds in this league that are coming up on the schedule are going to isolate running backs or tight ends or receivers in the slot on some of these linebackers and take advantage of the middle of the field, because the Dolphins proved yesterday, at least through one game, they can't defend that very effectively.
When we come back, Adam Beasley, our Dolphins insider, of course, the beat writer for the Dolphins for the Miami Herald, he was out in California in Oxnard. He probably doubled the attendance because, boy, a 27,000-seat stadium, and there were a lot of empty seats there. He'll tell us about that experience and a lot of other things about the Dolphins when we come back next, right here on The Ticket. The first place Miami Dolphins. I'm going to say that coming out of every break. We're not going to say that for too much longer, I wouldn't think. They're 1-0. Patriots and Bills 1-1, right? Jets 0-1, pick a week. I think it's going to remain that way for quite a while. Boy,
let's take advantage of it while we can with the Dolphins.
God, if the Dolphins, if you lose next week. You know, I have to say this. The Dolphins, we interview the opposing head coach every week in a conference call. And for a long time now, every team does, you're allowed to request an opposing player to interview. And the Dolphins, for a long time, have asked a few of us media members, they send a text out, name three players you want so we can submit into the opposing team, the upcoming team, and they'll hopefully get your first choice, if not your second or third. And lately, the conference calls have been, you know, even stretching back to last year, not that interesting. And so they sent out a text, do you guys even want one? And I wrote back to the whole group, saying, I thought the opponent has to be an NFL team for you to have an opposing interview.
Oh, man. Must be Jets week.
Must be Jets week. To talk about yesterday's game in California, in Los Angeles, and about the upcoming opponent as well, Adam Beasley joins us right now in the Orion Fuels and Downstairs Convenience Stores guest line. They are truly steps beyond convenient. It flew cross country today. Were there more people on the flight than there were in the stands yesterday?
Well, first of all, good evening, guys. Hello. Second of all, you guys stole my thunder. I was going to make a Jets joke, the same one I made on Twitter last night, that the Dolphins are the first team in NFL history to have byes in two of their first 3 weeks.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like that one.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yes, it was. There were a lot of people in the stands yesterday. They were just wearing aqua and orange. I had estimated, I guess conservatively, that a third of the crowd would be Dolphins fans, and you read the LA writers, and they're like, oh, no, it was half. And there were a couple of surreal moments in that game yesterday. I mean, Timmons, which we'll get into, was number one. But when the Chargers kicker, whose name I will mangle, but his last name is Koo.
Young Wei, we pronounce. Greg, even though it looks like Young Ho, Greg said he pronounced Young Wei Koo.
I'm glad that you got that clarification.
Yeah, well, Bees, I of course, you know, this is where I go for all my pronunciation guys. Just went to the Georgia Southern Athletics website and figured it out there.
Yes, so when Young Wei Hu lined up for that 44-yarder, we couldn't really see from our vantage point, even though the seats for the press, you guys would be green with envy, because my goodness, was a beautiful. I was literally at the 50-yard line, maybe 25, 30 rows up. It was an incredible place to watch the game, but from our angle, we really couldn't see if the kick was good or not. And obviously, we couldn't tell by the crowd reaction, because there was much cheering for the Dolphins as there was for the Chargers. And we were really confused when the cannon went off. They fired off the cannon in Los Angeles, almost at San Diego, in Los Angeles, believing that they had won the game. So welcome to L.A. You screwed everything up.
Wow, that's embarrassing.
Well, you just have to watch the refs. That's what you have to watch, the refs underneath the goalpost.
Even the players didn't know what was going on. So it was kind of a surreal scene, and I guess we'll get into Timmons pretty soon, but that was just part of it.
We're going to get into it now. I open up the press conference because, first of all, yesterday we saw the tweet that Adam Gase will discuss it after the game. After the game, we played some of that yesterday in the postgame show. He deferred it to today. Today I open up the press conference by asking him about it, and he, as I said, black holes have shed more light than he did on Lawrence Timmons. I mean, that's the elephant in the room, obviously.
You guys got that audio? I'd love to hear it. I haven't heard it yet.
We're having trouble playing it while we got a guest on the phone, so we're
who was peppering him? That's what I want to know. Who was
all of us?
You started it
all of us. Kind of
getting
Barry Jackson, Steve Wine. There were a few of us that that, you know, asked him about that, and it, you know, it opened up the line of questioning, and then we went back to that a few times. Barry asked him, will he be on the team in the future? He refused to answer that.
Yeah.
Steve Wine asked him about team rules. He was clearly irked at Lawrence Timmons, and this caught the team off guard. I wouldn't be surprised, even after just 1 week. There's a lot of layers to this story that we don't know. I'm sure the Dolphins know much more than, as your tweet said, maybe they can say, you know, if it's any kind of medical issue or mental health, and I have no idea if it is, but if it is, they're handcuffed as to how much they can say by federal law.
Right, yeah. I don't know what the acronym stands for, but HIPAA basically means if you're a corporation, you got to shut up about your employees' health. If that's anything at all to do with it, and we kind of may be reading between the lines, the tea leaves, you know, he's meeting with a doctor today. Well, what kind of doctor? It's probably not for his blood pressure, you know. That's when a guy, you know, vanishes, goes AWOL the night before his first game with the team he signed a 2-year, $12 million contract with. My guess it was not because of a hangnail. Not to speculate too much, there's something that they have to get to the bottom here, why he behaved in the fashion which he did. And he has no history of this. That's what's kind of bizarre, is that he was an iron man for the Steelers. He would play every week. He didn't get hurt, from my understanding. You talk to the players, and you guys were there today. I talked to him yesterday out in Los Angeles. They couldn't sing his praises enough about how much of a leader he is, how much they liked him on a personal basis. It's just befuddling. It really is befuddling. If this was something as simple as, hey, his kid is really sick, he's in the hospital, and he had to drop everything and go, we would know that by now, right? That story would make its way out, and Adam Gase would not be snapping you guys at a press conference 24 hours after the game.
Well, let me interrupt you here, Adam. We've got that sound. Let me play some for you here.
Okay.
Here's Adam Beasley. Here's Adam Gase saying, I haven't yet dealt with – I'm going to play three sound bites back to back to back here. I haven't yet dealt with the Timmons situation.
I haven't gotten through step one yet, so kind of got in a little late last night, so I'm kind of dealing with the guys that played.
And Steve Wine opened up some questioning about team rules, and here's Adam Gase saying, players shouldn't violate the few rules that I have.
Do you consider yourself to be a coach who has a lot of rules, or just a few pretty basic ones?
Be on time and play hard. I don't know if that's real hard.
So with those being the rules, when those are violated in your mind, I mean, what's your tolerance level generally?
What do you think? We got two rules. It's not hard.
By the way, you can hear him tapping the podium as he's doing that. That's the banging here. One more to play for you. And you could tell this is, again, you can tell he's irked here. You could tell in the last song, by dealing with Timmons is not my top priority.
Nothing to add for what I have right now. I'm really just gathering a lot of information, and I got a few other things I got to deal with the guys that played yesterday.
He wouldn't even admit that he's, well, you know, will he be part of the team going forward? He wouldn't address that. This is easy. Have you talked to him? No, I haven't. Is he even in the building? I have no idea. The third question I find dubious. Nothing goes on in that building without Adam Gase knowing about it.
Yeah,
if he was there,
I would agree with you on that one.
So I don't know the situation with Lawrence Timmons. We don't know, but I don't know if he's going to be part of this team going forward.
Yeah, I mean, when I hear that, I know someone who has to have a good answer as to his actions. And I don't want to speculate on the air. We can do it between ourselves. We won't get in trouble with, you know, libel laws or slander laws, things like that. But your mind goes to a couple of places, and I'm sure your listeners can use their imagination when past incidents like this have happened. It's usually not for any good reason. So he's clearly upset because, I mean, I was thinking about this. I got back to Florida. I went for a quick run. Nice weather tonight. I don't know how well it's going to hold up. It was nice weather. So, I'm going to get a good run in. And I was thinking, I was like, consider the thousands, not hundreds, but thousands of collective hours that those coaches spent preparing for 4 o'clock Sunday, basically since the season ended back in February. You can even include all the scouts and personnel guys and guys like Stu Weinstein who do their due diligence, some players like Lawrence Timmons. They have been building everything for, obviously it was 1 o'clock a week ago Sunday, but that didn't happen because of Irma, but everything for 4 o'clock this Sunday, and as Gase said, they really, in comparison, don't ask all that much of their players. Yes, training camp is a bear. Yes, they would probably not prefer spending their Mays and June running around South Florida heat in OTAs, But aside from that, you really have one job, and that's to show up and play. And if you can't honor that commitment to the people who pay you millions upon millions of dollars, in Lawrence Timmonson's case, to his teammates that were depending on him, that is a huge, huge breach of trust. And how that trust is repaired, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great question. Hopefully we find out more on this situation over the next couple of days, especially what they decide to do, what form of punishment there may be.
I mean, they only have a couple of options, to be honest, Greg.
Right.
They could bite the bullet and just cut them. And my colleague Barry Jackson had the exact finances. It would be a lot of pain over 2 years, some this and a lot next. And they're already up against the cap. So do you want to basically hamstring yourself for the next 2 years to make any moves at all? I mean, throw out any extension for Jarvis Landry if you have to do that because of one bad day. I doubt the Dolphins want to do that. I think they want to see if they can make this work. And so one, I guess, arrow in their quiver would be suspending him for violation of team rules. And they have in the CBA an allowance to do that. I reached out to the league to see if the league was investigating, and their response was like, no, this is a team issue. The team can decide discipline. And I think they can suspend him up to 4 games for that violation. Whether or not that affects his contract going forward, alters the terms of what's guaranteed and what's not, I haven't seen that contract, so I can't speak to that. But at the very least, there could be some punitive punishment by the Dolphins towards Lawrence Timmonson. But before you get to that, you got to figure out if this is a guy you can trust at all and if he wants to play and if he's in the right frame of mind to play. And I think he needs to get a full clearance from the neck up from a whole host of people because of what he did. I mean, you go and read that TMZ article, and this isn't a guy just flaking out. This is a guy who vanished from the team hotel. They only discovered it because he wasn't there for bed check at curfew. They made not just one, but multiple. They filed multiple missing persons reports all throughout Los Angeles County looking for this guy, and they only found him because cops found him at a gate at an airport at LAX trying to fly to Pennsylvania. That's not someone on the eve of this first game with his new employer as a starting outside linebacker making $6 million this year. That does not speak to me as to someone in the right frame of mind unless there was someone on death's door that he needed to get to, right? I mean, I think that is the only scenario in which that's okay that can come to mind. Can you think of anything else that would say, no, this guy is thinking clearly as to what he's doing?
No, and then to your point earlier, if it was that, we probably would have heard that by now, right?
Correct. Yes.
So there's
nothing about this scenario that we've heard, and we've talked to dozens of people, both inside and outside the organization, that tells me that this is something good. That there's not. I mean, obviously, a child being ill is not good, but it's understandable. It's nothing that there's a rational explanation for. So for the Dolphins to put Lawrence Timmonson on the field, they have to believe that they can trust him, obviously from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint. Are they going to craft a game plan around a guy that they feel like could vanish on him? These are all questions they're going to have. So again, I don't envy Adam Gase. There are no good answers to this scenario. There really aren't. And that's kind of been the slogan for this entire season, right? I mean, we're only one game in. Yes, they're 1-0, and they should be happy about getting a win. That was a good win yesterday, and I don't think that should get overlooked. That was a very good win against a talented football team. But starting with the second week of training camp, Ryan Tannehill getting hurt, what do you do there? Well, you can bring out Jay Cutler out of retirement. That was a pretty good idea. I mean, it's worked out pretty well so far. Then you have the hurricane bearing down. What do? Do you move the game up a couple of days? Do you try to get out of town and play it somewhere else, or you just postpone it and then get no bye? Again, no great answers. So this is, I mean, we thought this team had experienced adversity in 2016, and they certainly did in a lot of different ways, but it's got nothing on what we've seen already. And again, we're just in week 3 of the NFL season.
Yeah, and a lot of those factors that you mentioned, especially finding out this Timmons scenario the day before, I think it makes the win yesterday even that more impressive, even though it was an ugly win and there's plenty of things you can criticize. I wanted to ask you about some of the sentiment that your colleague Armando Salguero wrote his article on, and that, you know, for years, the Dolphins always seem to mess things up, especially late in games, and we'd always look at it and say, well, yeah, that's just what the Dolphins do. It seems, though, under Adam Gase now, from last season, or most of last season, and now yesterday, that things just seem to go their way. Are we seeing a new era of Dolphins football where they actually can be clutch in these types of scenarios?
It all depends on whether or not you believe winning close games is a skill or variance. I mean, really, that's all it comes down to. Is it, hey, the ping pong bounced the right way in that carnival game where you're trying to win a goldfish and it went in the right hole and you won a goldfish? Or, hey, you got a great shot and you knew the angle of the bounce and it went in because you threw it with the right arc. I mean, that's really what it's coming down to. Is it just they've gotten really lucky over the last 17 games and they've had some talent and they're taking advantage of it? Or, man, this is a different team with a different frame of mind that knows the game's within a score or two in the fourth quarter that they're going to win it. I'm starting to believe. You know, I'm a skeptic. I'm a numbers guy. I by and large, think that at the end of the day, a long enough timeline, these things even out. But they're not evening out yet, and they're winning the same exact way, even obviously with different players, every single time. Like, what is their MO? Find a way to keep it close, particularly on the road, and find a hero in the fourth quarter. Your hero yesterday was a guy who wasn't even on the team 16 days ago. I mean, how crazy is that? I was thinking, and there's a lot of ways you can second-guess, certainly, how that last 3 minutes of that game unfolded. I would have personally gone for it on fourth and five. Instead of kicking the 54-yard field goal, I didn't think that was a particularly high-percentage play. But you know what? They had trust in the guy they picked up off the waiver wires 2 weeks before, literally 2 weeks before, and he hit the kick of his life. And then you go down the other end of the field, and how many people were screaming, pulling their hair out, why are you calling timeout? Well, it didn't hurt them. I don't think it was obviously Gase's explanation. They weren't icing the kicker, but for as strange as we saw from the outside, that worked for them, and they got it done. And so, yeah, I mean, after a while, you just can't discount it as a bunch of lucky wins. I don't think you can sustain that. What are they now, 10-2 over the last 12 yes. regular season games?
Yes.
That's not luck. That's a good team.
Is there any truth to the rumor that the National Hurricane Center is going to rename Hurricane Maria Hurricane Youngway Koo so we know it would miss South Florida? All kidding
aside. We need that sad trombone. Wah, 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 wah.
We're up against it here, but one of the things that impressed me was the rush defense. They only allowed, 44 yards on the ground. Now, one texter kind of took us to task saying, how can you judge a rush defense? They only ran 14 times. I'm looking at it from the other side saying they abandoned the run because they saw how well the Dolphins were defending it. Where do you fall on this?
Yeah, I think a little of both. I think if the Chargers would have stuck to it, they would have gotten to those linebackers at some point. But Ndamukong Suh was a man possessed yesterday. I mean, he was, I think, from basically from word go, remember that whoever that right guard was for the Chargers, and I should know this, but I don't know off the top of my head, he just annihilated him on an early run, loss of four, and they basically just waved the white flag after that, running the football. And, yes, a lot of credit goes to those backup linebackers. Mike Hall played every down yesterday. He led the team in tackles with 10. Yes, if you go back and watch the film, there were some guys running free in the flat that Hall didn't have the speed to keep up with. But when he's going downhill against the run, he's not a liability. He's pretty good at that. And so I think, yes, you can be encouraged because the Chargers have a pretty good, if not very good, offense talent-wise. You hung tough against the run there. You allowed only 17 points. I mean, if the Dolphins would have lost yesterday, it would not have been the defense's fault. It really wouldn't. Even if their Chargers kicked that last-second field goal, 20 points for a Hall of Famer who was on yesterday, you really can't ask for much more than that out of a defense that's playing again, shorthanded. They didn't have, we spoke about Timmons, Ray Malalugu, who knows when he'll be healthy, and they already were without Misi and McMillan for the entire season. So I think it only can get better from that, to be honest. I think, yes, the back end needs work, but once you get Malalugu back and if they find a way in their hearts to forgive Timmons and let him play again, this could be a pretty decent defense, and that's honestly all you need against for the Dolphins because their offense is going to be really good this year. I think it's going to be high-powered.
And speaking of that, Bees, before we let you run, on the offensive side of the ball, you know, Adam Gase admitted after the game it wasn't a great day for him as a play caller, and I think everybody noticed that, especially with how conservative they were in the first half. But what do you think overall of Jay Cutler's performance? And I know you feel good about the offense moving forward, but specifically from yesterday.
Yeah, what was he? I had the stat in the paper. It was 11 of 16 for 155 yards and a touchdown in the second half. They'll take that all day, right? I mean, if you give him that, if Cutler gives you that kind of production in the second half, mistake-free football, I think that was the most important thing. He didn't turn the ball over. Was there a turnover all game? I'm trying to remember.
Not by the Dolphins.
Yeah, did the Chargers have one? I don't think they did.
No, it was a clean game from that standpoint.
Yeah, and
although
not a ton
it felt
of flags
like
either.
Hey, it felt like Cutler tried to turn the ball over, but Devontae Parker bailed him out.
Yeah, so he is a nice eraser of mistakes for sure. So if you get better at Cutler and you got Jay Ajayi, who I don't think there's any question now that he's a top 10, if not a top 5 running back in this league. If you have that combination, and boy, those skill position players look really good yesterday, didn't they?
All right, hey, Bees, thanks very much. We're off for late for a break, and we'll see you on Wednesday at camp.
All right, fellas.
Take care. That was Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald. We're back next right here on The Ticket. Fantasy football question for you guys out there, your fantasy football players. I'm not going to talk about my team. Nobody cares about anybody else's team. I'm not going to do that. But just in general, in theory, and there are a lot of variables to this question, but just in theory, in fantasy football, would you rather be ahead going into Monday night with no more players to play and your opponent is trying to catch up to you, or behind where you've got players to go on Monday night, your opponent has nobody and you're trying to catch up to him?
That's a good question because it's kind of a psychological thing, right? Because, you know, for the most part, I think common sense would say you'd rather be ahead, right? You have the lead and that's a good thing, but at the same time, you know, from a psychological standpoint, I almost like the idea of, like, tonight, I'm behind and I need Odell Beckham Jr. to have a nice game and I can potentially win. In that sense, if you pull off the comeback, then it's a pleasant surprise for you. You kind of go into it with a negative mindset. It's like, well, I need to have this, this, and this, and if it doesn't happen, probably not going to happen, whatever. If you go into Monday Night Football and you have the lead, then it's stressful every time your opponent's guys have the ball, right? And if it's a receiver and they get a target and all this other stuff. I mean, common sense would tell me you have the lead and you hope you hold on to it, but I would say it eases off the pressure when you're behind and you're trying to make the comeback. I don't know. Maybe I'm just playing mind games with myself here in fantasy football.
To me, it's all about the cushion. Like it depends on the position that you have that you're going up against and you know, how many points you're up or down by. Like if it's, you know, a running back, you know, I want to have, you know, if I'm up, I want to have at least, you know, a 10 to 12 point cushion. If I'm down, I want to be somewhere within 10 points. If it's a quarterback, more like 20. Like I want to have that as my cushion either which way. So it all depends to me on which position you're talking about.
And I tell you what, ahead or behind, you're sitting there looking at the clock and negotiating with God that if the clock either can tick slower or faster, you'll do this, right? I mean, you're just praying for that. So one guy texted, I'd rather be behind with players left. It's nerve-wracking, as you guys say, both ways. It's just you sit there and now my opponent, by the way, can catch up to me tonight if somehow Theo Riddick and the Giants defense can combine for 97 points, then he's going to beat me tonight. Other than that, I win. I'm winning 180 to 84.
Is that like the ultimate humble brag, right? I mean, maybe not even put the humble in front of it. That's just a brag from Josh.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
That's right. I should text the guy. You know, I should find out his number. Good luck, buddy.
We got some breaking news here.
Yes, sir.
John Carlos Stanton, number 55.
Oh, wow.
Just hit a three-run bomb.
So are the Marlins up? What's the score? Is it 4-0 now?
5-1.
5-1? Okay. Marlins are fighting to stay alive, right? Because there's an outside glimmer of hope. They're 12.5 games behind the Rockies. Should somehow this season the Marlins lose or the Rockies win, just one game, Marlins are eliminated.
Yes. But with
so there's
that,
a chance.
With that being said, I think we established within the last couple of weeks, I know we said it for sure last week when they started playing poorly and then he wasn't in the lineup one night. The only reason to watch the Marlins right now is to see if he's going to hit a home run. And so they return home tonight to open this series against the Mets, and he delivers. So that's good. So if you're bothering to watch Marlins baseball these days, that's the only reason to watch, and he delivered tonight with the 55th home run.
He's the only reason to see this game. It's an unwatchable team right now. I'm not urging a boycott. In all my years on radio, I've never done that. But just this is a team that's 3-17 in their last 20 games. All right. They're playing terrible baseball. They've just given it up. They're not doing well at all. It's completely hopeless. Stanton is the only reason. If you don't care about Stanton going for homers, why even bother?
Right. Yeah. So good stuff there. By the way, I guess just before he hit that three-run home run, D. Gordon stole his 55th base of the season.
Wow.
So 55 stolen bases, 55 home runs. So that's kind of cool.
And the Marlins might end the season with 55 wins.
The ultimate synergy, right? Hopefully, with the games remaining, Stan doesn't stay at 55. We can see a few more bombs from him.
But what are they? How many games they have left? What's their record? It's
their record right now. I'll tell you in a second as the game refreshes. They're 69-80, so they're 149 games.
All right, so he's got after tonight they'll be the 150th. He's got 12 games to hit five homers. Because boy, that would be something if he could hit 60. That's a nice round number right there.
That is, yeah, that's
rarefied air.
It really is, and that's manageable. I mean, considering the streaks that he can get on, obviously. So I mean, 12 games, hit five home runs. That, again, that's going to be the only reason we're paying attention over those final 12 games. By the way, for anybody who has been kind of interested in Monday Night Football, the Giants on their first offensive possession ended up going three and out. It looked like the Lions had scored a defensive touchdown on Eli Manning sack and fumble recovery for a touchdown, but they reviewed it and determined that Eli was down. And so then the Giants went three and out. But for those who need the Lions' defense to score, it could have been exactly what we're describing, right? That roller coaster of emotions where either you're playing the Lions' defense or you have the Lions' defense, and at first it appears that you've either put some points on the board fantasy-wise or you've allowed some points on the board fantasy-wise, and then it was taken off the board because of the review.
Texter writes in the Coral Springs Automall Honda text line, Frito, I was once trailing by what seemed to be a gazillion points a few years ago, with my only player being Aaron Rodgers. He played on Monday night. He had the game of his life with like five or six TDs, and I won by a half a point.
Oh, wow.
Oh, your opponent must have just been seething. Just ticked off. Oh, that's, I mean, I'm glad for this guy, but boy, you know, you're the opponent. You think you've won. Absolutely. You're already spending the money, if you will.
Right.
And all of a sudden you'll lose by a half point.
Well, you know what is deceiving? If anybody uses the ESPN website for fantasy, which I do for both of my leagues, actually, and in one of them a couple of seasons ago, you know, we have a half point per reception league. So it's not quite a PPR, but it's not a non-PPR. We're at a half point PPR. So with that comes a lot of strange scores, right? And the website, when you're first looking at the game center, it just will show you to the nearest decimal point. So it's like 0.1 or 0.5 or 0.7, whatever it might be. But sometimes with some of these scores, it goes beyond that, and they don't show that immediately. So in our league, the rule is if it's a tie, then the tie is broken by the bench points. So whoever has the most bench points. So one week, I tied after the Monday night game, made a comeback, looked like I tied, and my bench points were superior to my opponent. So I'm like, I won the game. This is unbelievable. And then I look at the league standings on Tuesday, and my opponent had gotten the win, and I hadn't. And it literally went down to like the 100, not the 10th, but the 100th of a decimal point. And that's how I lost. I lost by like 0.01 or something of a point. I mean, it was unbelievable. I was writing the commissioner. I was like, there's something wrong. My bench points. And they're like, no, actually, you have to go like a fraction further.
God, that's ridiculous.
To determine that you lost the game that week.
I think last year ours went into decimals, and we have a full PPR, so it's not necessary. We just eliminated all that. Because I think, you know, if you get 1 yard for 1 point for like 10 yards rushing, it would go into decimals. You know, if you got 5 yards rushing or something, I'm glad to get rid of all decimals.
Yeah, it can make it more complicated than it needs to be. Have you ever lost a fantasy game based on a scoring correction that comes out later in the week?
I don't think I have. No,
I have lost that way as well. Like on a Thursday or a Wednesday or Thursday. I'm not sure. I don't remember exact day that the NFL does this, but they'll review everything.
Right.
And at times, it's kind of like in baseball. You got the scorekeeper, and then maybe they make an adjustment before the nine innings are over. But the NFL will do that. And one time I lost a game that was very close because of a scoring change that occurred to somebody's statistics.
If you, and no one, again, no one cares specifics about your specific fantasy team, but if you have any interesting fantasy stories like that, heartbreaking or just great ones, share them with us at 67974. Texter writes in, do you think Kyrie left because of LeBron? Kyrie says no. We will delve into Kyrie's comments next, right here on The Ticket.